evening. You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere else at WIOXradio.org, where it's also easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., we talk about a different forest-related topic. So, with Ryan and John, but Ryan's not in tonight. I have a familiar voice on the other end here, Mr. Mike Porter.
Welcome.
How
Thanks
you doing?
For having me on.
Ah, I'm glad you're back. Yeah. Mike's been on the show, I don't know, half a dozen times or more.
Oh, yeah.
More than that right now. Yeah. But Mike's a good fill-in when we don't have a guest, but we want to get into some deep forest discussion.
Yeah. Sometimes deep. Sometimes not so deep, but yeah.
So he's the irregular regular.
Yeah, and I feel like I can talk about almost anything, but usually we talk about this and that.
Usually it does. Yeah. But this show tonight we titled Playing in Your Woods. I think it doesn't matter how old you are, that you can still go out and play in your woods. And Mike, I don't know if you want to say on the air, but you're not a spring chicken.
No.
And you still love to play in yours.
I do. And there's questions on my outline here, like, what are you doing differently today? A lot of it involves a blue tractor.
Yeah. Hydraulics, so you can lift things.
Hydraulics and forks and backhoe with a thumb on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe I've got a song that'll play into that then. So, Mike, in the last week or two, what have you been noticing different in the woods? Usually Ryan and I open the show by what's going on in the forest.
One of the things that I keep track of on a yearly basis is the end of the robin singing. I call it the big shutdown.
Oh, yeah?
Generally, right around July 28th, 29th, the birds stop before sunrise. Now the robins are done. They've raised their young. They're fattening up to head to greener pastures. Cardinals are singing now. Carolina wrens are singing now. Carolina wrens didn't sing all summer. I didn't hear one or see one all summer. They really lay low when they're nesting. Robins are fighting for territory and fighting to keep their territory, and they're really vocal.
I know a lot of
people hate it when. It wakes you up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and as I've been thinking about it, this will never happen. But if somebody's more night owl than me, I'd like to do a test to see what time the robin first sings compared to sunrise, because it seems as sunrise starts later and later after the solstice. The robins start later and later.
Oh, okay. So they don't have a timed alarm clock.
No, they have something related to the sun. So, but I was thinking about it today, coming back from my woods, singing, would I ever do that? And I got thinking, no, I'll never do that. I'll never be up at 3:30. I'm occasionally awake at 3:30, but I'm never regularly awake.
Uh-huh.
So
maybe that's a good job for a thesis on a grad student's paper.
Yeah, it
or
would be. Yep. And we have a catbird occasionally. It must have been the birth ritual, because when his eggs hatched, he was singing all night long, literally.
Her eggs?
Well,
his eggs.
It was the male singing.
The male.
I'm pretty sure.
Huh.
Saying, yeah, I got a family.
I did it.
Literally all night long.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's very quiet in the woods right now. I've heard one thrush in the last 6 weeks.
Oh, there was one singing where I was today.
Really?
Oh, I think it was a wood thrush, though. Yeah. I have a hard time telling the difference.
Yeah, I can tell the difference pretty good. And I heard both in the last couple weeks. I heard one wood thrush. I forget where I was, but I heard it in the distance.
Yep.
And then I heard a hermit thrush up at camp one time.
Well, this one was pretty close to me. I was higher up in elevation in a kind of a cherry beech forest.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, that was fun to have. I have a catbird at my house that I only see when I go out to do the chickens. It's always right there at the edge of the blackberries.
Yeah.
And then I have a phoebe that I don't ever notice until I have a little fire pit in the backyard. And as soon as I light the fire, I think its nest is up in the maple tree above it.
It squawks.
Oh, it doesn't like it.
I have a Phoebe with a nest right over top of my Jeep in the barn. Yeah. So the associated mess goes with it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not fun.
But, yeah, it's we've got a pair of twin fawns. Yesterday when I was sawing lumber, I looked up and there was a fairly big fawn, still spotted, but fairly big fawn right behind my sawmill shed. And I stopped to say hello, and then when I hit the throttle on the saw, he took off, or she took off. And then we have a doe who has found a really nice laying spot between two of my lumber piles. And she'll lay there when you pull in, and when I come back up with the tractor, she's still there. One day, I pulled into the sawmill and got off the tractor and slowly walked over, and she was still there.
Yeah.
So she doesn't go until she realizes that her territory is being infringed upon.
Oh, yeah? So she's walking right up to her, she's there. Yep. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Fawns, they usually stick, they have their spots until the first week of September. That's when all the deer are usually changing their coats pretty fast, and bucks are losing their velvet.
So. Yeah, I went up Dry Brook and saw a nice buck one day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, I saw a bear today.
Did you?
It was pretty cool. It was very unique. It had a big white patch on its chest. That's usually a little more rare.
Huh.
I've only seen a few like that, but this one had quite a lot. A big patch. That was fun to watch. He's large average bear. Yeah. I wouldn't say he was huge, but large average. Hmm. And as soon as I was going down a back road and pulling a trailer with a four-wheeler bouncing on the back, making all sorts of noise. And he was fine until I hit a big pothole, and he was just standing in the road looking at me. And then he scurried right up an apple tree right there.
Oh, so wow. He
went right up at the tree, and I thought I was going to get some good pictures of him up in the tree until I got about 15 yards, 20 yards from him just before I can get that perfect angle looking up, because the tree overhung the road. So he was like over the road. Yeah. I was just going to get a picture through my windshield. And I hit another pothole, and the trailer made some noise again, and he came out of that tree and just went booking gone. So I was a little disappointed, but missed a photo opportunity.
Yeah. Blackberries are ripening. I picked a few today. Remarkably, they're pretty lush. We weren't sure they were going to be with all the dry, but they're coming on nice, and the blueberries are doing well, so...
Good. Well, my blueberries have been done with for a while, but that's because my chickens got them.
Oh, yeah.
But the blackberries, oh, man, I had a great crop, but it was on the power line above my house. There's a power line right away that goes through the center of the land. And last week, maybe the week before, they came through and sprayed it. So, lost my blackberries. Well, they're still there, but I'm not going to eat those ones.
Nah.
But I do have a bunch around my house and my garage that I'll get into. But anyway, so tonight isn't just this and that. We're talking about playing in your woods. We have Mike Porter on. Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself if someone doesn't know who you are.
Well, I grew up right here in Roxbury, actually up around the corner from the station. I went to college in Oneonta. Got a teaching degree, taught in Margaretville for 33 years, retired, been active in the fire department. I was on the watershed museum board for a while. Been CFA board president now for several years, and I really enjoy that. I just have to say, I love every minute of it now. I've been writing letters. Probably people that are members will recognize my name. Each week during this coronavirus thing, as much as I could, I've written letters to the members about different things that strike my mind or tickle my fancy. And it's just based upon the things that I do, the things that I know. Someone asked me to do something that I didn't know much about, and I says, you know, maybe you should be a guest writer because I don't want to put bad information out there. And I know I send you and Ryan the letters before I put them out to fact check them. And so far, very little in the line of you're way off base. So I feel pretty good about it. And there's been a really good response.
Well, I mean, you're well known, you know, in your woods. You pay attention to it. So I guess, you know, you can't really be wrong about things you're paying attention to and see firsthand most of the time.
Yeah, a lot of times it's contrary to some of the popular beliefs, what I've found.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a birder, and over the years of birding, I birded when I was a kid growing up here, and I had good friends in Roxbury who I went out on the road with, and so I've been really serious about birding for years, and I've seen changes that are amazing. Like, when I was a kid, a cardinal came to town, and everybody had to go to Caswell's to see that cardinal.
Oh, yeah?
The only cardinal I'd ever seen was there. There was a mockingbird up at a place in Meeker Hollow that we went up to see. It was only there a couple of years, and since then I've seen them a few times, but they haven't seemed to colonize here yet. Carolina wrens, red-bellied woodpeckers, tufted titmice, we kind of take them for granted right now, and they were not here. When I was a kid, the evening grosbeak was hugely plentiful, and there was a problem with spruce budworm, and their population just exploded.
Uh-huh.
And the Caswells, where I would spend a lot of my time, were feeding 50 pounds of sunflower seed a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of birdseed.
That's a lot of birdseed. It was a lot of birds.
I couldn't afford to do that.
No, seed was cheaper then, but still, everything is relative. So.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I was feeding, I had a picnic table at home. I put birdseed on in the winter because we couldn't eat out there. And I was feeding probably 10 pounds a week, or more than 10 pounds a week. And I had to spend my own money to get the seed. So some days they went without. But it was still interesting. And then things changed in the North Country, and the grosbeak population just plummeted.
And why is that?
I guess there was a lack of food.
Huh.
Yeah. You see them occasionally in the Adirondacks, or fairly regular in the Adirondacks now, but not in the numbers. They're one of the finches that's listed in the wintertime eruptive species. And two winters ago, they were on the list for the Catskills. And I had them at the feeder, and like four or five or six individuals for a couple weeks, and that was it.
You're talking about evening? Or
evening grosbeak.
Evening grosbeak, yeah, not red-breasted.
No, the rose-breasted ones are spring birds.
Gotcha.
The evening grosbeaks come in the winter.
Okay.
That's a huge change. What else? Oh, there used to be hundreds of house sparrows. I think it was all because there were two feed stores here in town, and they really took advantage of all the loose feed laying around.
Okay.
But we hardly see them. There's some downtown in Margaretville, but twice a year they come to my feeder, two blocks away from Main Street.
Hmm.
I don't see them. I guess I don't put the right kind of seed out for them. They're a little fussy. They like really cheap stuff. And I spend pretty good money on bird seed.
But. Oh, okay. So why paying attention to birds and birding as a hobby has been really something you've done to play in the woods since you were young and carried through till today.
Yeah, and the thrushes, we were talking before the show came on, hermit thrush and wood thrush, they used to be as common as robins almost. And now you're really lucky if you hear one. And veeries I generally hear once or twice a year. It's the cowbird.
Oh, okay.
The cowbird is a parasite that lays its eggs in these birds' nests, and they don't have the innate ability to separate it. Some species will recognize it and build a new nest over top. There are a couple species, and I can't remember them right offhand, actually will kick the egg out of the nest. But the cowbird hatches early, and it's bigger than its host. So it ends up destroying its nest mates. Then we have the early cutting of grass for the farmers, and that's dropped our populations of bobolinks and meadowlarks and field sparrows, to name a few.
Well, but that's nothing that's changed. I mean, everybody, we've had farms and more abundance and more grass cutting back then.
This early, the early chopped grass is cut way before it used to be cut.
Oh, okay.
And there were always fields that were left fallow, and there was always bobolinks. There was always meadowlarks singing. I see a meadowlark once a year if I'm lucky.
But now there's also a lot less fields, too.
Yeah.
A lot of that became forest.
Yeah, they did. But there's the open ground birds have just really struggled with that. Yeah. Bald eagles are everywhere. When I was a kid, you never saw a bald eagle.
I think that's I talk about this with some people sometimes, and I guess maybe I take it for granted, but I talk to, you know, older people in my life all the time, and we'll be mid-conversation, and they'll stop the conversation to point out a bald eagle.
Yeah.
And though it's still neat, but, you know, it's we've had a lot of bald eagles for at least my lifetime.
Yeah.
Well, I see if I want to go see a bald eagle, I can show you one and within an hour or two-hour drive, I'm sure I could point one out.
But that's different than it used to be.
Oh, I know. That's what I mean. It just shows the change.
Yeah. Like my father-in-law, who would have been 100 this year, never saw a deer until he was 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, little things like that, you know, I didn't experience that, but it's amazing when you think about the history of our wildlife. And he was 16 years old before he saw a deer, and he lived on a farm.
Well, I mean, the habitat was gone, you know, for deer.
Yeah.
And a lot of wildlife. And we're living in the age of comebacks, and there's no doubt. There's plenty of evidence now of have we gone too far.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot to be said about that. But this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight, we're talking to Mike Porter. We want to talk about playing in your woods. Mike's talked quite a bit about, you know, what he used to do when he was younger, a lot about birding, and we'll get into a little more about to the middle part of his life and where he's at now playing in his woods.
Oh, don't you lose that light in your eyes. You're never too old to love. It's never too late to try. When somebody needs you, give them all you can give. When you're living to love and loving to live, stay young, keep your wheels in motion. You've got everything that you need. Stay young with your rock and rolling. All the best things in life. Thank you.
All right, this is From the Forest on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. Every Wednesday, we talk about a different forest-related topic, and tonight, I have Mike Porter on. We're talking about playing in your woods. So, Mike, did you do any hunting and fishing when you were young, playing in the woods?
I never hunted.
Never hunted.
No, but I fished quite a bit. And I fished right outside the studio, actually.
Yeah.
We were talking about this before the show.
I thought I wanted you to get into this. Yeah. This is great.
The villages used to have unique septic systems. And if you didn't live in that time, you don't realize that. But every home in the village of Roxbury drained into the stream with a septic pipe. It was a clay tile that'd come in, dark brown clay tile.
Mm.
And we fished in that stream all the time. And right outside here by the bridge, we'd be down over the bank on the rocks by the old feed store or on the other side of the stream or on the upper side of the bridge, anywhere out there. And somebody was on standby to listen for the rumble of something coming down the pipe. And whoever heard it would yell, "Flush!" And everybody just kind of get out of the way until it floated downstream. But yeah, it was. That's what was happening.
And the fishing was good then.
The fishing was really
good.
Well,
all right. So maybe we need to go back to the old ways.
Polluted water.
No?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But this was after the reservoir was in.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, so the reservoir filled up in like 54, 55. And I wouldn't have been fishing down here till I was a little older, maybe when I was 10, 11 years old. So around 1960. And they were still dumping.
Hmm.
And my father actually bought a backhoe and went around and dug cesspools. It was no fancy system. It was just a hole lined with blocks with usually a train car door over top. And it was in usually gravel.
Yeah.
Dig into gravel. And he did that all over the place.
Huh.
And it wasn't for years until they did the septic systems. I know Margaretville had a septic system early because they were right at the sewer plant. And the city paid for that whole thing, and they actually pay to maintain it.
Okay.
We have no sewer tax or anything in Margaretville. I think these newer plants like Roxbury's hooked up to Grand Gorge, they pay a user fee.
Mm.
And they're responsible for a certain amount of the piping. Technically, we're not responsible for anything outside our foundations in Margaretville. The city is supposed to come in and repair it.
Oh, wow.
I know there's been some issues with it with a couple people, but that's the way it was designed. And we had a plant. Grand Gorge had a plant that was that way. A couple of the towns right at the head of reservoirs got those sewer plants in that way. Now they're just putting them in because it's better than cesspools.
Right. Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Mike, when you were at any point in your life, I think a lot of people, when they go playing in the woods, maybe for the first time, or novice to doing much, hiking might be the first activity.
Yeah.
Were you ever a hiker?
Not really.
No. Why not?
I don't know. I guess I played a lot of baseball and soccer and basketball. So I really didn't spend a ton of time in the woods. But in the summer, when we woke up in the morning, our mom says, "See you later. Come back for lunch and then come back for dinner." And we were right next to a hill, and we played on the hill a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of what I was in the woods for was birding. I really spent a lot of time walking through the woods birding. I've hiked some, but I'm not a vet. Rabbit hiker.
Yeah.
We go to the Balsam Lake Fire Tower. We were volunteers there for a few years. We've done the Fire Tower walk on Super Bowl Sunday since 1977 or something.
I've yet to go with you.
Yeah, you got to go. And actually, the last 2 years I've had knee trouble, so I've only gone part way. And I turn around because coming downhill was tough.
Mm.
But I think this next year I'll be able to do it. I just got my knee replaced, so that's going to make it a little less painful. But in terms of going to other places, I've done Slide, I've done Giant Ledge, things like that, the Drybrook Ridge. But not on a regular basis and not fanatically.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Hiking, when I grew up and even now, I go out, walk in the woods, but I don't go up a trail very often. I don't go hiking. It just never really appealed to me to go play in the woods that way.
And now there's a lot of people in the woods.
Yeah.
On the trails.
I know. I did one hike this year, earlier this summer, and I bet I saw 200 people on the trail.
Yeah.
And wasn't fun for me.
Yeah, no, it's not fun. My son lives in out near Jackson, Wyoming, and he's a guide, so he's on the trails all the time. And last night he said, it's been absolutely nuts in Jackson.
I bet.
Yeah, there's no bus tours, so everybody's coming in cars, so there's cars everywhere. The people are going to the Tried and True, which is in the Grand Teton Park, and he said he's trying to make a living there, and he has to fight with people all the time. The only way he makes it is to go up the Grand or up one of the mountains where most people don't bother going.
Right, right. But, well, when I go, I have no destination usually. I just look at a map, find a ridge that I want to go check out, and it usually relates to, you know, scouting for a hunting opportunity, maybe, or just to see what's up there. And if I make it up the ridge or if I get distracted and walk somewhere else,
okay, then
that's what I do to play in the woods. And it's truly playing at that point because, you know, I feel like sometimes hiking is more like work. It's like you have to get there and you got to make sure you're there on time so you can get back before dark. And like, it's like, I don't know. What if you don't? What if you just go see something to not know what's there, just to check it out?
Yeah.
That's the fun of it.
It's similar with the bike trips I've done. I did a trip on the Erie Canal one time, and we had to be in a certain place every night because that's where we got fed and that's where we slept. And I wasn't real thrilled with that. I did it, and it was easy, but it was, you know, if you saw something interesting, you really didn't have time to stop. When I did my cross-country trip, we planned destinations, but after the first night, we couldn't keep them because our realizations were way off.
Oh.
So we would stop at places that were different. So we didn't have that major push to get to a certain spot every day. But, having a time frame is tough, you know?
Yeah. You got to live life without an itinerary, right?
Sometimes.
So, Mike, you, at some point in your life, you bought your first playground.
Yes. Becky and I went looking. The kids were 9 and 7, something like that. We went looking for a piece of ground. We have very different looking fors.
Okay.
Becky wanted a view, at least. I wanted a swamp. And the two are real.
Those are opposite in some eyes.
They're not mutually found together.
Yeah.
And we were up on Dingle Hill driving.
I think around. I would go for the swamp, too.
Yeah. I wanted the swamp.
I think Julia would, too.
Yeah. We end up turning the swamp into a pond. But we went up on Dingle Hill. I actually met up with Frank Winkler, who's now a neighbor. And he said, I haven't seen any for sale signs anywhere, but talk to this local farmer who has done some real estate. So we visited with this farmer and he talked to us for an hour and a half and didn't have anything. The next day he calls and says, oh, by the way, my daughter has a piece of ground she'd like to sell.
Ah.
And if you want to come look at it. So he took us to the top of it's on Davis Hollow. He took us up. He told us what the boundaries were. There are walls all around and a stream, so it was easy to find. And we walked through it, and it had 5 acres of Scotch pine on it, and my eyes lit up. Cabin.
Uh-huh.
And it had a swamp. And where we looked, it was a spring. It was really a nice spring. And that's where the swamp came from. And Becky said, there could be a view here. So
beyond some trees, there was a view, right?
Yeah, beyond some trees, there was a view. So we went back, and we actually bought it in 88, I think, 87, 88, somewhere in there. And we decided to build a cabin. So we hired somebody to come in with a bulldozer, and they made a leveled-out spot so we could start work. And I my brother and my father-in-law were both experienced with building log homes through Alta Industries. And I didn't do what they were doing. I made my own design. I drew it out on a piece of paper, and I went to the building inspector, and he says, yeah, go ahead.
That would not happen today.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
It was just a pencil, you know, pencil sketch on a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And we used, I have a 46 Willys. That became our skidder. And
Willys is a Jeep?
Yeah, it's a Willys Jeep.
So yep. 1940s Jeep skidded logs.
Yeah, and I put a, I had a tow hitch on it because it had a tendency to break down and we could go pick it up. And we put a boom on that. It was an old wiffle tree from a horse sleigh, and put a pulley on top because when we got up like three rows of logs on the cabin, we had to have something to lift them. So we'd pull them up with that. And so we pulled logs, put the wiffle tree on, stack logs. And we started in the summer of 88. And my brother says, you're never going to get this done. My father-in-law said, you're never going to get this done. And the kids were now 8 and 10. And Becky was really into it. And we went up every day. Got the poles put for the piers, put the deck on for the floor, and started the logs. And we'd gone through the woods and marked the trees for diameter so we knew we could get decent trees. And we got logs to make 6-inch and 7-inch thick logs. I bought a Alaskan mill and a really old partner chainsaw. I paid $50 for the saw. And we'd go up and I would start milling, and I'd have like 6 logs set up on blocks, and I'd go through and mill, make the first cut on all of them, then I'd set the depth of the saw and make the second cut. And then that night we'd put the logs on. So they were cut down, milled, peeled, and put on in 24 hours.
Huh.
And I read about how you would, you know, construct the thing to take into account the shrinkage. So I had nothing nailed down. It was all splined, and I had rebar. I drilled holes and put rebar in just to hold it from falling over and nailed the corners. And Columbus Day, we had the roof on.
Wow.
My brother came up and helped with the roof. My father-in-law helped with the roof because I don't climb. And they says, we didn't think you'd do it. And we had Thanksgiving dinner there.
And what's the cabin look like today?
It really looks pretty good.
Hey, so you'll have to call the building inspector and let him know that.
Yeah.
It was just fine the way you did it.
Yeah, and he actually, we got a CO.
Oh, did you?
So we can live there.
Wow.
And we have an outhouse that was approved by New York City specs at that time. So we have an outhouse, and we have spring water, but it doesn't run in the cabin. We have gas lights, gas refrigerator, gas stove. We have no electric. And the biggest improvement we made was putting a roof over the deck. We have now a porch.
Hmm.
First thing I did was bought a porch swing so we can sit and just watch the world go by. And that's been the best improvement we've made.
So sitting in the woods is playing in the woods.
It is, yep. Yep. Because a lot of the other playing in the woods that I do, some people think is work.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah. Cut firewood. I have a sawmill now. The pine trees that we used to build the cabin are now starting to age out. It was a Scotch pine forest that was put in the mid-60s.
Planted, right?
Planted, yeah. It was 5 acres. And when we first bought, there was a lot of dead trees. So I did a lot of knocking down the trees, and then we cut the trees for the cabin. And I never counted how many I cut, but we think it's somewhere around 100. And I've pretty much let them grow until the last 5 years. And now they're starting to die because they're just aging out.
Sure.
So I said, I've got to make something out of this. So I bought a sawmill. First, I borrowed one.
Yeah.
Not many people can borrow a sawmill, but I have.
So how'd that work?
Oh, I had a blast. Becky says, what are you going to do with all that lumber? I says, I'm not sure, but I've got it. And a lot of the first stuff I made mistakes on. So the most of that lumber I haven't used, but I've made some things out of some of the stuff. Now I'm learning from this guy who's had some experience on a sawmill. I go with him on jobs for Catskill Forest Association. In case you people out there don't know it, John is a pretty adept sawyer. And I go to help, but I also go to learn. So,
well, thank you, Mike.
Yeah. I don't stand there to watch every decision he makes, and I haven't asked enough questions yet. But eventually I'm going to start asking questions about why'd you turn the log that way? But since I've been working with him and coming back to my mill, I've made some pretty nice lumber.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, I've used some of your lumber. I've bartered some with you. And actually, my whole bathroom was cut on your mill.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, all the trim work in my bathroom.
I did a floor for my daughter.
Excellent.
And it came out beautiful.
What kind of wood?
Larch.
Larch. You like larch?
I do. It's beautiful. It's resistant to rot. It works pretty good. But you have to wear gloves because it's got these little stickers that are invisible to the naked eye until you take your bare hand and touch something, and you're full of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The lumber or the log? The outside?
Logs and the lumber.
Really?
Yeah, it's bizarre. I gave a neighbor a piece of it the other day, and he worked it. He made a birdhouse for me, and he made some for himself. And he said, what's in that wood? He says, oh, Bill, I forgot to tell you, wear gloves.
Oh, man. Well, see, I've worked with it a little bit, and I guess I haven't noticed that. But I don't know. Julia, my fiance, tells me all the time that one of her hobbies is to find thorns in my hands.
Oh.
And sometimes they've been there for days.
And you don't even notice?
She goes, how didn't you feel that? One time there was one well up underneath my fingernail.
Oh.
I had no idea until she pulled it out. I wasn't even looking, and she just walks up and yanks it. Ow!
Yeah.
Then I noticed.
Yeah. So that I spent a lot of time with my sawmill, and every day I go up, I think of something kind of new I want to do. I got into some really nice wood. My sister-in-law, her man friend's place, they cut down a nice maple tree, and she decided she wanted something. So she says, "Well, give you some logs if you cut something for me."
Okay.
And they came over and we cut what he wanted, and I've got that ready to go to the kiln. It came out really nice. And I cut a tree a maple on my place that I had tapped once, so I have a couple of really nice tap hole boards.
Oh, cool!
And I'm thinking I might make a new countertop for my kitchen at camp.
Cool.
And make it out of that maple.
Very cool.
It's pretty cool, you know. And the tap hole maple is really kind of neat.
So what makes it unique?
Well,
just a hole through it.
When you drill a hole, the hole never grows back in. It covers up from the outside. The tree heals over it, and when you drill that hole, it introduces air and bacteria. And above and below the hole, there's a graying streak or a browning, depending on your color blindness level. And it goes up about a foot from the tap hole and down about a foot. And if you cut the board right, you get that hole. So you got to cut across the tap hole to see it. If you cut longitudinally through it, you might not pick it up as well. But going right up, you know, parallel to it, you got a real nice streak in there.
I know a lot of foresters out there say if you tap your woods, then you're ruining the lumber. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I think
it all depends on what you want. If you want veneer, you're ruining your lumber.
Oh, sure. And if it's going to go to a big commercial mill, they won't want it. They'll cut the butt ends of the log off and make the log shorter. But, you know, to the right buyer, like if you cut it or you had it custom milled by somebody, even just for yourself, or like I said, people know what tap hole maple is who build furniture.
Yeah.
They might pay more money for that.
Yeah, right.
It's a rarity.
Well, it's like wood that's spalted or curly bird's eye. I mean, those are things that, that you find in a log that ultimately might not be worth a nickel if you take them to a sawmill. But if you go to a private guy and he finds it, that would be worth a fortune to him.
Right.
Because what he can do with them.
Right.
And Gary Mead is like that. He loves that kind of stuff. And he sawed an oak for me that was curly. And it was beautiful.
Wow. Where does, what'd you do with it?
I made a desk for my daughter. And I made an entertainment center for my living room.
Wow.
And I've actually got quite a bit of it left. It's all dried and it's just sitting up in my barn waiting until I decide to do something with it.
Hey, you'll come up with something.
Yeah. But I traded him half the lumber and he took the lower quality because he likes to use that. And he sawed it and dried it for me. So I can do all the rest.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
So this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic. And tonight, I got Mike Porter on. Mike is a local legend around the Roxbury and Margaville area. People know the name. And we're talking about playing in the woods. Mike's got a lifetime of stories of just playing in the woods because he still does it today.
Yes, I do.
Rolling down the backwoods, Tennessee byways. One arm on the wheel, holding my lover with the other. A sweet, soft southern thrill. I worked hard all week, got a little jingle on a Tennessee Saturday night. No, I couldn't feel better, 'cause I'm together with my Dixieland delight. Spend my dollar parked in a holler 'neath the mountain moonlight. I hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turtle doving on a Mason-Dixon night. It's my life, oh, so right. My Dixieland delight. Tail buck deer munching on clover, a red tail hawk sitting on a limb, chubby old brown hog, croaking bullfrog, just as free as a feeling in the wind. A homegrown country girl gonna give me a whirl on a Tennessee Saturday night. Lucky as a seven, living in heaven with my Dixieland delight. Spend my dollar parked in a holler 'neath the mountain moonlight. I hold her up tight, make a little loving, a little turtle doving on a Mason-Dixon night. It's my life, oh, so right. My Dixieland delight. My dollar
and holler neath the mountain moonlight. Hold her up tight, make a little loving, little turtle diving on a Mason-Dixon night. It's my life, oh, it's all right.
This is From the Forest on WIOX Community Radio 91.3 FM. From the Forest, we talk about different forest-related topics, as you might think. And tonight we're talking playing in the woods.
Yeah.
So Mike Porter is on. Mike is a lifelong resident to Delaware County here in these Catskill Mountains. He's been telling us some of his stories playing in the woods, because he still does it today. Right now, is one of his big interests is working on a sawmill. But Mike, I gotta ask you. You talked about the land you bought. Why'd you buy it right down the road?
Because I wanted to get there quick.
You wanted to use it. I was gonna say, because most people, when they think of going and buying land or something, they want a destination.
Yeah. When
we're building a place to get away from it all, you know.
We were building a cabin, and chainsaw was running hours on end because we did everything with chainsaw mill. And a neighbor came over, and we were picking up stuff. It's like Sunday at 5 o'clock or something. And she says, "Now, where do you kids have to go back to?" I said, "We're going to Margaretville." She says, "You're what? Going to Margaretville? You live in Margaretville, and you'll come up here to build a cabin?" I said, "Yeah, you can enjoy it more." And she was working in Long Island as a teacher and coming up weekends. If you come up weekends, you mow the lawn all the time, and you just can't play.
I know. I see lots of people doing that. I mean, this one lawn I know, they must spend 3 to 5 hours, I'm guessing, 3 hours mowing, and then whether or not they weed whack or not, up to 5 hours every time they come up.
Yeah. Well, my very next door neighbor is from Staten Island.
He's a lot
And
like
he
that.
Comes up to mow.
Yeah.
He'd come up and spend the whole day mowing.
Why?
Why? Yeah. What do you? And some of the stuff he mows should be left.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't. His father-in-law, when he owned it, he would leave the field and have a bush hog like late in the year.
Okay.
And there's a lot to be said for that, for the wildlife and stuff.
And
the
birds. Yeah.
Yeah. He mows it religiously, and if he doesn't, he hire somebody to do it if you can't get up. So,
well, it does look good. There's no doubt about that. But
I'm a fireman in Margaretville, and I'm up there one day, and my pager goes off for a fire at the corner of Orchard and Mountain Avenue. That's where I live.
Uh-oh.
An explosion.
You thought your house exploded.
I thought something happened. I can make it home in 8 minutes.
When you have to.
Yeah. It was not pleasant.
Wasn't your house, though?
No, it was the church. They had a propane tank overfilled.
Ugh.
It popped off, and somebody called it an explosion. But,
wow.
Yeah. So I'm 12, 13 minutes of comfortable driving. And it was always nice when you spent a day up there playing or working, whichever you want to call it, and you're hot and tired, and you hop in the car or the truck, and you go home with the air conditioning on. It gives you a chance to cool down a little bit. It was just enough. And you could go home tired because you wouldn't fall asleep in 10 miles.
That's true.
But And it's been a perfect spot to be. And through this COVID thing, we've been up there virtually every day.
Oh, yeah?
Becky and I. Yeah, Becky's doing all sorts of neat things. She's made a couple of deer exclosures out of tops of trees that I've cut.
Nice.
Where she piles brush up high enough that she hopes the deer won't jump in. And she's planting some stuff in there that needs to be deer-proof. She's playing around with things like that. And she redid a little bit of a stone wall and put some other trees in down by the cabin. And been working on the fruit trees. We have apple trees and blueberry bushes. So she's been messing with them. And it's been perfect. I mean, for me, the COVID thing hasn't been a change in my life, except I can't go to coffee break. Because that's what I do all day anyway, you know?
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of stories of people buying land around here, and after this whole COVID thing, land and houses are selling like crazy. Yeah. So I hear, but I think that's what it is. You know, people want to have the opportunity to get out.
Yeah, definitely.
And go play.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why I started writing those letters is because there are people here that may not really know what to do with their woods.
Right.
Or what to do in their woods. So I gave them suggestions.
Well, what's some advice that you would tell people to just get them out in the woods and get them started? Because you said it perfectly, and I'm the same. I mean, my life honestly really didn't change. I mean, other than the regulated changes we are going through, and that's one thing. But as far as lifestyle goes, my life didn't change at all.
No, you can be isolated in the woods without any trouble.
Right.
You know, fortunately, it works. I guess if you're going to buy something, don't settle, first off. Don't settle for something that you don't really want. Don't settle for something that's too big for you.
Definitely, that one.
Don't settle for something that's too small. It's a little different today because stuff is so expensive.
Right.
I balked at paying $1,600 an acre for our place. We have 17 acres.
Yeah.
I think it was that much. And I balked at that. I said, no land is worth that. And today, that land would be worth $3,000 or $4,000 an acre.
Right.
And then if you have a house on it, I mean, it goes way up.
Sure, sure.
So you got to stay within your means. If you have an interest, it should be able to occupy you on your property. Like birding, hiking. Although hiking around here, you don't have to have hiking trails.
No, there's enough public land.
There's enough public land. And the city has some nice ones opened up, as well as the state trails. So hiking is not a big deal. And fishing, if you want to put a pond in, if you have a place for a pond, you can put trout or bass in it and hopefully catch them someday.
But again, you know, the opportunities for fishing around here are abundant.
But there's opportunities everywhere. Yeah, we have a really good fisheries.
Yeah.
Which has improved in some ways since the reservoir went in, because the brown trout fishery has gotten so big. And the reservoir, there's enough alien species in there that you can catch catfish and carp and things like that. What you don't catch now are eels, because they can't get past the dam. You can go to Downsville and catch eels and shad, which used to run up the river. But the fishing's pretty darn good.
Sure.
And we're still kind of world-class fly fishing territory, which makes it easy. Hunting, you know, hunting's not what it used to be in terms of the people. I can remember the towns just exploding with people for hunting season. And today, it's not an explosion. It's more like a little poof. I'm not sure what the reason is. Maybe a lot of the people that are coming up own their own places, so they're not coming to town as much. I don't know what it is, but
I have a lot of ideas about that, but it's probably enough for a whole nother show. But in a recap, I think, one, there's less deer.
Yeah.
So there's definitely less hunters. There's data.
Yeah.
There's plenty of data about that.
Yeah.
Hunting license sales are always been down for a long time and continue to fall. The reasons behind that are, you know, less deer. It's more restrictive than it used to be. Everyone I've talked to used to say, oh, well, I know him, or that farm was huge back then, or this and that, and the opportunity to not be bound by a property line was quite vast at one time.
Yeah,
and
it
that's
was.
That's harder and harder now, you know.
And the forests are aging.
Yeah.
The forests that are not managed, I think, is the best way to put that. And even though I'm president of the board of CFA, I have this feeling, and this is outside of CFA, please realize this. We are, our forest preserve land has done its thing. It was constitutionally protected in the 1800s because it was a need to protect the land. It was being exploited and destroyed in terms of the forest. Now it's successfully regenerated, and it's time to manage it.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a lot of debate out there about that. I mean, we've even talked about it on this radio show before. Is, you know, New York State is now the landowner that everybody watches, and is the set it and forget it mentality really appropriate in all situations? And a lot of times you can find answers to say no. And I think if you dig through the archives on From the Forest, you'll be able to delve into the deep topic on that and make your own decisions. But Mike, we're really getting out of time on the Forest. And is there anything you want to leave anyone with playing in the woods in about half a minute?
I think the biggest thing is to realize that playing in the woods doesn't have to be throwing a frisbee or hiking. You can improve your woods and still be play. Learn to operate a chainsaw safely. Learn to use your wood, whether it's for firewood, which is an acceptable use. Learn a valuable tree from a not valuable tree. As a plug to Casco Forest Association, who I'm the president of the board, and John, you are wildlife specialist, contact Casco Forest Association, join, and have one of the foresters come out and let you know what you got if you don't know.
That's absolutely what we do all day. Is,
and
that's
key.
On their
you
land.
Gotta know what you've got in your woods.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure having you on again, and
it's always a pleasure.
I'm sure we'll have you on again soon. So, thanks, everyone. This is From the Forest on WIOX Community Radio, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear.